Lady Gwen, thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's very, very nice to be with you.
It's our 400th episode.
Episode 400. I know.
Congratulations.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Danny and Cersei join us on this ride today. Also, Dario, Barristan Selmy, The Bloody Flux, Cersei and all of her friends.
Maggie the Frog, Prophecies.
Maggie the Frog, Magi the Frog. Did you reread the chapters in preparation for the episode, Lady Gwen, or did you skim it because you know it so well?
No, I totally reread them.
If somebody doesn't reread before talking about the chapters, that's the most baller move
I've heard of it before. Aziz never rereads them. Spoiler alert. Every time he comes on the podcast.
Bold.
He's just like, I read the wiki.
He's like, no, I've got it. I got it. We're good.
The Cersei one I'm pretty good with. I am actually literally have to reread all that whenever I'm talking about Dany because
they're all the same.
Yeah. I get things confused. So
it doesn't feel like I'm reading the information for the first time necessarily, but it's kind of like when we go back on rewatch The Throne and you're rewatching the episodes. It's just with the context of everything else, the details that you should be looking for or maybe you missed before really come to the forefront, and the motivations of the characters as well kind of stick out. And we have two chapters today where I think it's very obvious how we're supposed to feel about these characters. And I had a lot of fun reading these just before recording today.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed them both.
The stench of the camp was so appalling. It was all that Danny could do not to gag.
I didn't enjoy that part.
Sir Barristan wrinkled up his nose and said, "Your grace should not be here breathing these black humors."
I feel really bad for Danny in this chapter. And I'm excited to dive into the details of it because it's a pretty depressing. I think that we kind of get stuck in Meereen with Danny for quite some time. And it's a little bit of a slog. But I think this chapter is especially depressing and sad as we really literally get down and dirty with all of these people that she desperately wants to help but cannot figure out a way. Like, her hands are tied and she can't figure out a way to do the most good. So to really see that up close and personal, and as we describe the stench of the camp and the dirt and the sickness and all of that, made me really feel for everything that Daenerys is trying to accomplish and how much of an uphill battle that is.
It is. And she takes so much of it personally. She's because this is the result of her mistakes that she's made, arguably. So it's pretty tragic to be in her head seeing this stuff that she can't change.
When she wants so desperately.
Yeah.
To be able to heal everybody.
Yeah.
Something I thought was interesting at the beginning of this is as she first arrives into this camp and she begins to kind of go through, everybody shouting to her, calling her mother in all these different dialects and languages. And it just, I think, really highlights how far she's come to get to this point and how many people she has amassed responsibility of. And I think that that is such a great way of putting even more weight onto her shoulders of not only these people who call her mother, but it's not just, I mean, it's mainly the Astapori, but I mean, it just, I think, highlights the amount of people that she's thinking about and trying to save, and in such a noble cause, whether that's productive or not, or whether that's the right thing she should be doing or not. You know, that's major debates that I think all of us have had through A Song of Ice and Fire, but it definitely is noble. And I think that that kind of really highlighted the weight that that has on her shoulders.
What did you guys think about her physically getting near the Bloody Flux after hearing and seeing the vast, vast devastation that it had spread across the Astapori people that have been begging and crawling and dragging their bodies across the desert to be near Meereen for the chance of some kind of comfort, of her going directly into them and touching them and putting herself and her men and her friends in possible danger.
I think that you sorry.
Go ahead.
I'll say you highlight well. I mean, it's not only just her, but also all of her friends and all, like, her, so much of her inner circle. She puts them in danger as well.
I wondered about that, putting them in danger. She seems to have this faith that she's not going to get sick. It's almost, you know, she's clinging to this myth. Well, maybe it's not a myth, but about Targaryens not falling prey to sickness. The dragons can't get sick. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I wondered about how, if it was just very foolhardy of her to, especially when she brought out the Unsullied.
Right?
Yeah.
All of her best men. Yeah. Clearly yeah. she's never heard of the dragonpox.
Right.
Because that's the thing. Even if she herself is immune, even if that is actually true, you know, whatever, she can take that risk for herself. But she basically shames everyone into helping her.
They use the word, George uses that word, that after a while, the shame overtook them and they started helping, stacking bodies and burning bodies with black smoke.
I think we can understand that impulse, absolutely. But whether it was wise, you know, I don't know.
I don't think it was wise.
We know that those who she had ordered before to help had been stricken with the flux as well. And it's just kind of been one of those compounding issues. Mm-hmm. And we've heard about it and it's going to be a specter later on in the series, but I forgot how powerful it was and how detailed it was when we were actually here walking around in it for the first time. It's something that you can't ignore. It feels like a bigger threat than an army coming, because this is something that, you know, has so definitely destroyed people. But at the same time, we're walking around inside of it and we can't assume that all of these people are going to get an infectious disease and that's how the story of Meereen's going to end.
No, but they do a good job like putting the, making you feel that dread that what if, this is pretty scary.
I read a passage out of the book that's really gross.
No, please. No.
This is for everyone at home. A little bit of context if you're not reading with us today. Little children with swollen stomachs trailed after them, too weak or scared to beg. Gaunt men with sunken eyes squatted amidst sand and stones, shitting out their lives in stinking streams of brown and red. Many shat where they slept now, too feeble to crawl to the ditches she'd commanded them to dig. Two women fought over a charred bone. Nearby, a boy of 10 stood eating a rat. He ate one-handed, the other clutching a sharpened stick, lest anyone try to wrest away his prize. Unburied dead lay everywhere. Dany saw one man sprawled in the dirt under a black cloak, but as she rode past, his cloak dissolved into 1,000 flies. Skeletal women sat upon the ground, clutching dying infants. Their eyes followed her. Those who had the strength called out, "Mother, please, mother. Bless you, mother."
And that's the thing that strikes her the most. Mm-hmm.
Like, how dare you bless me? I've done this to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of guilt there. I just want to say that the cloak of black flies is really one of the grossest things for some reason. That really, really bothers me.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you love to see that adapted, though, in the series?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's horrible. Actually, the boy eating the rat, it reminded me of Theon, and it made me wonder, well, we're pretty far removed from the Theon chapter, but it's the same book where he eats a rat, so.
I think it was
those little things.
Maybe 4 or 5 episodes ago on the podcast that we did it, right? No, we just did the Reek one.
Yeah, we did just do a Reek chapter.
It was the Reek, I guess it was Reek 2, is when he woke up there in the dungeons, and he was so happy to have his hands on the rat, and yeah, I guess you can understand how they feel, except these people are out in the desert and they're just surrounded by each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, everything, as I said, anything you can say about Daenerys' decisions, and especially by the end of the chapter, as she makes the choice to keep them out, I think that the overshadow here is the line where she says, "I cannot heal them, but I can show them that their mother cares." And something I really like about her in this chapter is that she is willing to give up herself. She really believes in what she's trying to do. And so she's here to kind of inspire them and give up herself and possibly put herself in danger in order to do as much as she can, which is really just be a presence and be a hope to them, regardless of how that makes her feel.
Yeah. And it starts with her, with that moment of self-sacrifice out there in the camp, but then it goes on in the chapter with a pretty serious bit of self-sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
With Hisdar. So.
Wow, Hisdar.
I know. Yeah.
Had to say the name.
We'll have 1,000 nights together. Don't worry. Go to your storm crew.
Poor Hisdar.
Poor Hisdar.
He's like, it's okay if we don't do any of these traditions. It's fine. It's fine.
I thought he'd be a little bit more mad about it, but.
No, he's getting what he wants.
And the fighting pits weren't much of an issue this time either. She was just like, all right, I give up. I was just out in the field with all those people dying. Figure it out. If you guys want to have just blood on the streets in here, that's on your hands.
Yeah, but, right. On your head be it. Mm-hmm. She's like, I'm not going to have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. Don't do it in my name. Just King Hisdar, go for it.
King Hisdar.
I do like that in spite of the fact that she's going to basically sell herself to win this, you know, whatever, win peace. And she agrees to a lot of things. She kind of draws the line at being subservient or humiliated still. Mm-hmm. She's not gonna let them paw her body, or she's not going to wash his feet. And
there was that line where it says, but what they really wanted was to strip her bare. And I thought maybe it was figurative. And then in the next paragraph, they were literally asking her, they were like, well, you have to appear naked in front of his entire family and friends, right?
So interesting.
Strange Giscari custom.
It was. I liked her response. And ultimately, she said, you know, let them inspect each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what they find.
Special cake.
Oh, God, that special cake was hilarious. Uh-huh. It was like, but there's cake. It was like Portal. It was like, I know this sounds really terrible, but there's a cake that, you know, no one gets to eat but you. And that's pretty cool, right? And she's like, I don't know, man. A cake?
It's not even worth it for that. She's like, nope. I guess his dog could inspect me, I guess. If anybody's going to do it, it's going to be him.
Mm-hmm. On the night of our wedding, he can expect me as much as he'd like.
But his mother? No, thank you.
Yeah. What did you guys make of the contrast of the halves of these chapters? We had the second half sort of ushered in by the argument over who's going to sleep next with Ricaro. Mm-hmm. And it seems so shallow compared to, we've got a kid that is holding a rat in one hand that he's eating. I'm assuming he didn't cook it. I don't know how much that really matters. And the other hand is like a stick. He's ready to beat people off with it. You know what I'm saying? Like that's a very, and that's not the worst part, but these are very vivid visuals. I mean, we can imagine that this is a pretty horrific time, and it puts Dany in the state of mind where she's accepting a lot of these things that she wouldn't normally accept. And then we've got her handmaidens are, you know, arguing about this stuff. And then we've got Resnick more Resnick. We've got the Green Grace just talking about the fighting pits, just trying to fit everything in at the end of the conversation while she's clearly not there in her mind. It seems like they're just kind of cram stuff in and take advantage of the situation. And I was wondering what you guys thought about George R. R. Martin's intention for the contrasting halves of these chapters was.
I don't know. I think there's definitely a contrast. I don't know what his intention was. I just thought her response to the handmaids was basically, you guys shut up.
It was kind of like Cersei would do, right?
Yeah.
Being so annoyed with kingly duties for the day. It's just a really short response, too mean.
Yeah, I've just had it with you guys. Like, this is the most ridiculous argument I've ever heard. He's mine. Now go away.
Now be quiet. I need to take a bath.
Yeah.
Also, help me with this bath.
Can we talk about that bath, though? Wait, is that around the time? So there's some point in time when Missandei hears, I wanted to ask you guys this question. Sorry to derail your question, but Missandei hears some scratching.
Scratching, yeah.
And I know, I was just curious what everybody thought about that because—
You just didn't want to answer my question.
No, I didn't. I can answer your question and then ask this question. But the whole bath thing just reminded me of that piece that was kind of weird, I thought, and a little bit creepy. I didn't know if, because I don't think we have an answer to it, but I feel like it's kind of an interesting piece to call out.
Maybe it's the dragons.
That's the dragons is kind of what I think too. Although I don't know that it's allowed, but I read some Dany chapters elsewhere.
Oh, it's allowed. Yeah.
And Missandei dreams about noises every night. She comes in and says, I heard you crying. I heard you screaming. I mean, sometimes it's because she was having sex, but sometimes it seems like she has a lot of dreams about weird noises. So I was trying to figure it out, but I didn't have enough time to like really
maybe
work out
chalking this up to
what's going on with Missandei. But I kind of suspect that noise is the dragons, although I guess it could be something else.
Yeah, I had thought possibly dragons too. But I like this idea that you bring up that it could also be just like a broader thing going on with Missandei and something, you know, kind of playing into something else, but I have no idea. I just thought it was a little, it was like kind of creepy almost.
So, almost like she has some kind of empathic connection with Danny or something.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be something particularly like, I guess just thinking about the Astapori outside of her walls, maybe she's preoccupied.
It could, yeah, it could be that. But, you know, it still could be the dragons because Danny also feels, well, you don't really see it in that chapter, but she's got all this guilt about locking up her dragons too. So
she's got a lot of guilt.
Yeah, she really does. Poor thing. I just want to give her a big hug.
I know. That's why, that's why everything that happens with Dario, I'm like, get it, girl, because she has a lot on her plate. So she needs a break.
Dario in the series we just recorded, Rewatched the Throne, a couple hours ago, he swims 1 mile to this strange island to get her some wildflowers and then swims that mile back and then climbs the exterior of the Great Pyramid, sneaks through her window just to say hi. I feel like both of these Darios need to meet, reconcile their differences, and help Daenerys out in the situation because she's really got like his Dar and his friends otherwise, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Barristan's a good comfort, but he's all business right now.
It's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same. He's like her grandfather. I mean, right. They call him that.
That's
her grandfather.
So that's what she's looking for then.
Yeah.
She's looking for just like the right kind of comfort.
Yeah.
It's a tough day.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she needs, some days you just need more than, you know, grandpa patting you on the head.
Right.
So and you're doing fine, sweetie.
Yeah.
But I just went out in the field today, touched a bunch of people with the bloody flux, burned my clothes, and Darnaris is back. High five. It was awesome that the way Barristan cut into the meeting with the Green Grace and Resnick and Shavepate and was like, by the way, Dario's here, but the way he said it was in a way to relieve her of the annoyance of his Dar, even though he normally is very annoyed with Dario, he knew that this would be good news for her.
Yeah. And I like
that was really nice.
She was just like, okay, yep.
Yeah.
I am all about leaving this dinner and going up to meet Dario.
Oh, yeah. George wrote, she was a young girl and alone, and young girls can change their minds.
She pieces out and then she tries on 100 different dresses.
Yeah.
Sometimes she is just she's a young girl, you know?
She is.
You really see that.
Zach, that goes back to a little bit what you were trying to ask before I interrupted your question with another question. But the juxtaposition between everything that's going on in this chapter, between what's happening outside the gates of Meereen, between what's happening with Hisdar Zalorak, between what's happening with the customs and the fighting pits and the traditions and the people who are trying to kill her in every part of the world and slavery and, you know, all of this stuff is going on. And I think that a theme that we're often reminded with Daenerys is that she is just a girl and she's just she's young and she's just trying to figure it out and she's just trying to do her best. And that those, while she, you know, dismisses everybody gossiping and things like that, those kind of young tendencies are still woven so much through her narrative. And I don't say that even as a bad thing. I just think that that's just another way to highlight kind of everything she's trying to deal with as she here at the back end of the chapter is just trying to like chill and like be a normal person that would be doing what she would be doing at her age if she didn't have the weight of the world on her shoulders.
I'm nodding my head.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say well put. I was like, oh, no. I was like, I hope Jim jumps in right now. Like,
totally inaudible agreement. So
okay, good.
Dario was cartoonishly Dario. He says this about his wounds. First, he's dripping blood, and Daenerys is very concerned with it, as she should be. He was fighting for her, after all. She asks what happened. He's got a gash near his left temple. He says, a crossbowman tried to put a quarrel through my eye, but I outrode it. I was hurrying home to my queen to bask in the warmth of her smile.
Can't you imagine him, like, not having any blood on him, and then he knows he's about to go in with Danny, so he puts, like, a little bit in his hair. So it looks more, right. More intense.
Yes.
Or, like, how many streams they pass on the way home. Like, you could wash, it's but...
Like, no.
No.
I love that visual. I think it's so funny.
He talks about reaching his arm down a traitor's throat and pulling out his heart. And Danny says something in response, and Barristan's like, very gallant.
Poor Barristan hates this
in
guy.
A tone that suggested anything but he's got to sit through it because the I mean, he just saw her hanging out with those other people. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dario's a decent fix for the time being.
I know some people don't like Dario, but I don't mind him.
I don't mind him.
I'm pretty sure that's a Daenerys quote from this chapter, right?
Maybe. I just, like, I know people have strong feelings. Well, maybe not strong, but I know that people don't like him that much. And so I think that sometimes these situations can come off as annoying to some people. But I don't mind them.
Yeah.
What do you think about Dario?
I don't trust him, you know?
I think that's fair.
So,
is it the blue beard or the weird daggers?
Yeah. Maybe a little bit of both. No, I just don't think he's trustworthy ultimately. It's actually more stuff that happens later. Like in this chapter, he's just a braggart, you know?
Yeah.
He's there and he's not really my type, but he's fine. You know, Danny likes him. But it comes in later when I start to really think, boy, you shouldn't trust a sellsword, Danny.
You know? Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That's the thing about sellswords. They sell their sword.
Mm-hmm. Who would have thought?
And he doesn't like her as much as he likes the fact that she's a queen.
You said you've been with 100 women before, and he goes, 100? More like 1,000, but never a dragon.
Yeah.
Well, what are you waiting for? Boom.
Boom.
That's what Danny says.
Your clothes are stained with blood. Take them off.
He does come with some interesting news, though. On his return, he confirms that Yunkai is on the march, which we basically already knew was going to happen.
Old stale news.
Hmm?
I said old stale news. Isn't that Shea Paper?
It's like, okay. Yeah. We get it, Dario. And then he also, I thought this is interesting, he talks about all the men he gathered along his journey, including deserters from the Windblown, which I thought was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then also news of Brown Ben Plum being a traitor or whatever, which Danny's not very happy about. But
cue the prophecy talk for the rest of this episode.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was gonna say, do we get into prophecies now or do we wait until we get into the Cersei chapter? I don't know.
I'm really disappointed you didn't mention the Carthian camelry. That's also headed toward Meereen. I mean, that sounds like a dastardly foe. Can you imagine all of those strong Carthy nobles and all of their strong, I'm sure, soldiers they've purchased from elsewhere riding on camels toward Meereen?
It feels like that's not a very fast and efficient way to travel, but I don't know a lot about camels. So
I've never heard the word camelry before.
No, I don't think I haven't either in, you know, any like military history setting. Camelry.
They sound very gallant. Three treasons you will know, once for gold and once for blood and once for love. Hmm. Was Plum the third treason or the second one? Hmm. And what did that make Sor Jorah? And what did that make Sir Jorah? Her gruff old bear? Would she never have a friend that she could trust? Hmm. What good are prophecies if you cannot make sense of them?
Hmm.
If I marry his daughter before the sun comes up, will all these armies melt away like morning dew and let me rule in peace?
I do feel for her.
I feel for her too.
Do you believe in prophecy, Lady Gwen?
Yeah. And we're going to talk about one I really do think was a pretty good prophecy a little bit later. But Danny's, you know, I think Danny's are the kind that are going to make sense in hindsight. I find them very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's interesting what she says about what good are prophecies if you don't understand them?
Very meta.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I don't know what you guys think, but I feel like that is not true. I feel like that would be, if you fully understood a prophecy, why would you need it? I don't know.
Fair point, yeah.
I was struck by how in our face they were in both of these chapters. I don't know if it was because we've ordered them specifically back to back and that thread was so strong because of it, or if it was just interesting because George R. R. Martin chose not to be so secretive about it and to kind of offer up a different sort of confusion associated with prophecy rather than like the original kind, you know, the KFC kind where it's like, who knows what they're going to say? Who knows what they're going to do? Find out when Quaithe comes by. Rather, this time it's just kind of, we're in their head and they're revisiting the prophecy sort of in a way that we would think about it.
Good point.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, good question.
The way they think about it, it just seems so like in your face and non-mysterious. And it doesn't seem like the sort of thing an author would do if they were trying to make us be confused very much. It's a different kind of confusion. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not taking it too seriously, but also it is serious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you have any theories about these three treasons, Lady Gwyn? Have you guys talked about it much on Radio Westeros?
We have a little bit, and I, because we did do a prophecy episode, and we may have talked about it in the Dany episode too. But I don't know. I mean, I think Jorah and Brown Ben Plum, because she says them, are good favorites. But I actually think that we haven't seen most of all of the the triads that are in that mm-hmm. whole thing. I think that a lot of that has still yet to be revealed. Almost like she's jumping the gun in trying to slot her life into all of those things right now.
Like maybe she's trying to get it behind her, yeah. Figure it out now. Like mm-hmm. Marine's the right. Hill that I climb, and instead it's like, no, Marine was just a path.
Yeah.
Like on the way to the hill that you're going to climb. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If I could get through this, then it'll all be over and it'll be smooth sailing, maybe she's thinking. But I don't know. I just think a lot of it is yet to even happen.
I like that.
Maybe it's just because I don't. I guess I don't so do have good ideas about what
Jon
it is.
Jon Snow is going to turn on her? Is that going to be love? Is that it?
I don't see that as... I don't see what's going to happen with her and John as necessarily being a betrayal. So I'm not sure. Betrayal for love. Because I think it'll be her choice and it'll be like a mutual decision.
Like, do you think she's going to sacrifice herself?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, now we're getting into your real feelings today. That sounds so sad.
Yeah.
After all this, after she was the kind of leader in this chapter that Jon Snow would be mm-hmm. super infatuated with, walking through the camp and, you know, teaching, treating the wildlings just like they were one of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about her self-sacrifice. I mean, we've said it already like several times, right? She went out into the camps, you know, at risk, at personal risk, whether she actually believes that Targaryens can't get sick. There was a personal risk, and then she's sacrificing herself to Hisdar to bring peace. You know, this chapter shows her that's a personality trait she has. I think
definitely
one day in the future we'll look back and say, "See that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Dany 6 in A Dance with Dragons. We saw mm-hmm. how much self sacrifice she had in her. So
not afraid to put her men in harm's way, either.
Right." Right.
I don't think she took it very seriously, but that's fine. Grey Worm and his friends were going to go wash in the salt water as per their customs. And then that really interesting bit where Grey Worm talks about the goddess that the Unsullied share together. That was really cool.
That they don't speak of. I thought that mm-hmm. was interesting. But I think that just is another piece of kind of her, the way she handles her philosophy, which is, she has these very grandiose ideas and these very like sweeping black and white views of things. And she does everything in her power as nobly as her intentions are to fulfill those things, even if it's putting somebody in harm's way. Like mm-hmm. even if it's, you know, possibly putting herself in harm's way, as we're saying, if it's putting her men in harm's way, if it's like putting her people maybe in not the smartest way to move forward, you know, I think she is more than happy to, for her ideals, push forward anyway and just kind of figure it out on the back end.
Well, we see how well it turned out for Astapor.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, yeah.
Do you think she's putting Marine in the same kind of harm's way with agreeing to give Hisdar all of this power?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like she's kind of ignoring a lot of details. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just to push it through and to hope that it helps everything else quickly.
It's kind of scattershot. You know, she's just kind of like throwing something at the wall, you know, mm-hmm. see if this sticks. Bunch of mixed metaphors, but
they work.
Yeah. She's just hoping because she just wants peace, you know? So what does she got to do to get it?
marry Hisdar, hang out with Shave Pate.
I mean, I guess it could be worse.
There is Dario.
For now.
There is Dario.
Yeah.
What a pickle, Daenerys.
Yeah, well, here we are.
The Myrnese not Titans, for lack of better words.
Yeah. It's like, it's so hard not to have the same conversation about Dany every time we talk about her.
What did you guys think about the chapter overall?
Kind of like what I think of. Well, they get better. The Dany chapters and dance get better. So it was pretty grim. And then, Zach, did you call Dario cartoony? Cartoony Dario? Yeah, that's a good description. And so that's, you know, the ending.
What are you waiting for? They're literally burning my plague clothes right now. Let's burn yours just in case. She said near his purple beard. Man,
I would have loved to see Dario in his actual real Dario-ness. It would have would just have laughed at him the whole time. It rocks.
I had my contact lens prescription renewed in under 5 minutes this month using an awesome new app called Simple Contacts. Simple Contacts lets you renew your prescription and reorder your brand of lenses from anywhere in minutes through an online self-guided vision test. Every test is designed and reviewed by doctors, so they're literally bringing the doctor's office to your home. Think of how much time you save compared to making an appointment, getting to the eye doctor, taking time off for it. Their vision test is only $20. The prices for their lenses are unbeatable, and the shipping is free. But remember, their vision test is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. I did use my current prescription, not the online vision test. But if you do use their online vision test, it will test that the current prescription still helps you see 20/20 and then renew that prescription. They don't write completely new prescriptions or examine your eyes' health. I've been looking for an easy way to order contacts off the internet for a long time, and I'm glad that this came by the podcast because it solved a lot of problems for me, and I'm now actually wearing them instead of not having them and spending extremely blurry days outside. Listeners of the podcast can get $30 off their first Simple Contacts order if you head to simplecontacts.com/owns or enter the code OWNS at checkout. You will get $30 off your first Simple Contacts order. That is simplecontacts.com/owns or enter code OWNS at checkout. Well, have you guys exhausted all of your power for the Myrnese knot today?
Yeah, yes. I'm so amped to talk about Cersei.
Me too.
I think you said you needed 56 hours to talk about the Cersei chapter, Hannah, right before we started. You texted me that.
I was like, I wish I had way more time to prepare because I feel like this is a chapter that we're all pretty familiar with because of this is like the biggest layout we get of this prophecy. Mm-hmm. But I just have a lot of questions. I think there's a lot of questions about what's going on with Loras and with this Waters guy. And Cersei is just in rare form and Tommen is with some kittens. And then we get this dream that she has, and I think that there's just a lot of interesting unanswered questions that I can't wait for all of you to answer for me so that I can be smarter.
Yeah, I love listening to smarter people talk about things. My biggest takeaway was how far up in the Mander these Iron Men are. I'm so excited for Old Town and what might happen there. I like how everything's being laid out, but geez, Loras Tyrell just becoming the person that everyone knew he was. It said he was the first when they broke through Dragonstone to fight, the first through swinging his Morningstar around. It's one of those, it's not a flail. It's not the thing with the chain at the ball at the end, everyone. It's a weird spiked club with a whole bunch of stuff on it. In old video games I used to play when I was a kid, it's usually ogres that carry these around, like big, huge ogres.
Big people.
Right. And it's Loras Tyrell, strong and beautiful, running into the fray and almost dying. I mean, this, when I read it for the first time, obviously the show didn't adapt it anywhere near in this way. And I felt like I was really getting a treat. And it was awesome to reread again.
Mm-hmm. It's like he's on a suicide mission.
Well, yeah.
Almost.
Which
kind of was.
Yeah. He kind of was. So it's sad.
I found it sad.
But it's also cool.
I find it really sad. I also thought, you know, he was also really angry because Cersei wasn't going to release the fleet to go defend the Reach, you know? So he was just like in this super hurry to just get it over with.
Yeah.
You know, get this siege over with. And then he's got this suicidal tendency.
It's like he wanted to clear out his foes as quickly as possible because that meant that would they would be home mm-hmm. quick as possible. And that's why he was at the very front. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Arianne Waters says, and this was after Cersei was asking about Loras, he says, "I never saw a braver knight, but he turned what could have been a bloodless victory into a slaughter. 1,000 men are dead or near enough to make no matter. Most of them are own and not just common men, Your Grace, but knights and young lords, the best and the bravest." And that's, I thought, paralleled very interestingly with all the dead people that we saw outside of the Gates of Meereen. It was like, well, I don't know if it really matters that they're knights and young lords, but I get what they're saying here. And it's just, you know, interesting when you see how people in Westeros and the different classes feel about people that are not in their class and how casually these things are said and they don't matter. Like Cersei has a lot of internal thoughts in these chapters, but something like this is just totally rote to her. She's like, yeah, of course, they're not worth anything.
Right. It's like a blip on her radar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially when we think like in the context of what she thinks about her own children and her own son in this chapter. Mm. It's like people who are far away, who are faceless and nameless. Mm.
Yeah.
Or other dwarves.
Yep. Not so much.
Yeesh.
Yeah. She asks to hear the story twice so she doesn't forget any of the details. So
she's that was cold, man. Like,
don't want to forget any details. She can tell Margaery herself so she can. And then later on in the chapter when she's thinking about the taste of Margaery's salty tears and how that kind of helps her sleep. It's just like, okay. And then Margaery is very convinced that dying is not dead. And I think if we are to read into the way Margaery responds, I know there's like theories and questions about Loras and the Tyrell intentions here and kind of, is there some sort of conspiracy theory happening or is Loras actually dead or, you know, all this kind of stuff. So as I was kind of like listening or not listening to, I was reading it, this little exchange between Margaery and Cersei here, I was just thinking how much I would die for a Margaery point of view in this context and how interesting it would be to kind of see where they're at in this story from a perspective would be so fascinating.
What conspiracies are you talking about? Do people think that Loras is totally okay?
Some people do.
Really?
Or that Cersei's kind of being manipulated in this scenario by the Tyrells to make certain decisions.
And R.N. Waters.
Yeah, in benefit of the Tyrell cause.
Which would not surprise me, because I'm quite sure the Tyrells are, you know, they're manipulating her way more than... She's paranoid about them throughout this whole book, but I don't think for the right reasons. I don't think she realizes what's happening.
Do you think that Margaery knows, or they wouldn't risk it, potentially?
Well, that's one of the things, is that maybe Margaery's in on this. Because I think that if you read into Margaery's response to Cersei telling her everything, like she doesn't react in a way that people may think she needs to react, or that she, to me, it's decently clear that regardless of the conspiracy theories or not, she can definitely read Cersei much better than Cersei thinks she can be read, and that her intentions are very obvious with this whole thing. You know, whether or not that actually plays into these theories, I don't know. But I think Margaery is in on something, or at least is very highly aware of what is happening.
What do you think, Jen?
I think kind of the same. I mean, she's obviously been in on quite a bit so far, going back to Purple Wedding. I think Margaery is pretty smart. She's her grandmother's granddaughter. You know, she's like definitely, I would say, maybe an apprentice of Olenna in that sort of savvy department. I just think Cersei is way overmatched. She thinks that she's very clever and subtle, and she's about as subtle as a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know that. It's so funny. I find it so funny to read her chapters.
If that's what's going on here, how embarrassing for Cersei. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, this changes things a lot, and it makes the prophecy in the same chapter really stick out.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like how Valonqar was mentioned early by the guy who was the Tyrashi guy who was trying to sell, or, you know, like, oh, this is definitely Tyrion.
Oh, yeah.
And he says that. Eyes out.
Yeah. I swapped. Well, you know, his eyes, we plucked them out, but these are glass eyes. I promise the eyes he used to have were the ones you described.
The ones you just described.
Yeah. Just now described.
Do you guys notice that the other three, so there's four people in that scene? There was a Tyrashi with the fake head. But the other three people each described a known dwarf.
Yeah, because the second one, the Mummer Show in Braavos, that's the one that stood out to me.
Yeah.
The third one, I wasn't sure about.
The third one is the Hermit in the Riverlands on Haunted Hill, which I believe is the Ghost of Highheart.
Oh.
And the first one, I think there is a dwarf who's associated with Old Town, and that's Penny and Oppo's father came from Old Town.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
My note on that was, these are Tyrion's potential futures he did not choose.
Oh.
I was like, I don't know which one I liked the most.
Yes.
Maybe the Hermit.
That sounds Hermit nice.
Riverlands.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Well, what I was amazed, actually, when I was reading and remembering that that's a reference to the Mercy chapter, which is out there but not published yet.
Right.
I realized that it's 2005 or whenever, you know, whenever it was written. I mean, imagine there's a couple of things in this chapter that kind of lean forward to Winds of Winter material. And it's just amazing to me that he's had that much Winds of Winter stuff either already written or in his head or whatever, going back 15 years or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, keeping track of all those.
You can see the way these little tiny details just make their way through, and how hard it is, to keep track of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking about the Mummer Show and Braavos thing. I was struck with that same idea of how do you, at this point, I mean, that's what makes this series of George R. R. Martin such an unbelievable writer, but it's also kind of like, well, if you knew that this was going to happen in Winds of Winter, then how come you, like, where is it?
Right.
But that's my negative.
Yeah. You have all these little details worked out, but just sick.
How hard can
the
rest be?
It's that whole deal with working, you know? It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. So Cersei kind of has an interesting thought. She's like, I can't believe there's so many dwarves in the world. Like,
yeah.
Well, yeah.
And Lady Meriwether was like, a few less now.
Yeah.
Right. Fewer than there were.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sad. And then she tries to get her to play hooky for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Cersei's having nothing of it.
Got to go to court.
If only Tywin could see me now. She's so proud.
Yeah. Tywin would not be proud of her.
I know.
Can we get that out of the way?
No. Tywin was trying like heck to get her out of King's Landing. I mean, he was going to marry her off to whoever he could find.
Anyone.
Balon.
Can you imagine?
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
I want that point of view chapter when she's there
in the Iron Islands.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. That would be fantastic.
I want Tywin's point of view when he actually considered that seriously, and he's like, mm-hmm. Yes, I think that would be a good place for Cersei,
and then immediately moves on.
Let's
to
send her to Pyke,
planning all the deaths of his other enemies.
Oh, that would have been good.
Can we, I don't want to leave this situation with Arryn Waters and the Tyrells so quick though, because I just completely went over my head, and now it makes so much sense, especially with the way he was so proudly describing Ser Loras, just to throw a couple extra digs in there if he's truly on the side of the Tyrells. And it makes a lot of sense because we're making fun of how far away from Tywin's daughter, I guess, that she really is, or at least how proud of her that he would be right now. He tried so hard to make a true alliance with the Tyrells, mm-hmm. because I think he understood how willing they were to do fucked up shit too. And I think that's really the key of the power that they have so far. It's definitely the key of Cersei's power right now at this point, or at least to say fucked up shit to people that they've done fucked up shit too.
Mm-hmm.
Completely make fun of Pycelle as much as possible, etc. If this is really happening, then it's going to be really ugly in the book 6 and 7.
Yeah, It is. And, you know, Jamie warned her not to trust this guy, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, oh no, is he her Dario? I mean, she's not kind of, because, you know, she really digs him.
But not as much.
No, not as much.
Chapter.
Not as much. Not the same. She's realized that he doesn't really, she's realized that he doesn't, he's not really like Rhaegar. That was, you know, the source of her initial infatuation, because she thought he was like Rhaegar come again.
I thought that maybe she just didn't like how he described Loras as brave after all.
Maybe. She's like, oh, this guy's not very smart.
It's like when George writes, Cersei misliked him on sight. This is the guy who brought the first head. Cersei misliked him on sight. Well, excuse me, the seventh head, but the first head in this chapter, but was willing to overlook his flaws if he actually had Tyrion's head inside the chest he carried. Well put.
Well put. That's Cersei in a nutshell, isn't it? She's willing to overlook a lot of things if it suits her, if, you know, it will help her cause.
Pretty good summary.
Mm-hmm.
If the imp's head is in the chest, in that chest, I shall raise you to lordship and grant you rich lands and keeps. Titles were cheaper than dirt, and the Riverlands were full of ruined castles, standing desolate amidst untended fields and burned villages.
So good luck.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of desperate decay right now, it seems, when you read through the words.
As we are reading through all these different people that are attempting to gain this prize, I just think it's so interesting, and what a major sacrifice it is to travel all that way and stand in front of her with some semblance of news. I just feel like that would be such a personal cost to even get there, that wouldn't you only go if you really felt like you had some actual chance? And so the fact that we get so many like randos is really interesting to me. I was like, didn't this cost you a lot? Like, don't you not have any money to do this kind of thing or travel this far? I don't know. Maybe not everybody went that far, but
it's their version of holding a rat in one hand and a stick in the other. They're like, well, I'm just going to throw this at the wall and see if it works.
Yeah. I guess so.
Maybe people are just really prejudiced. Maybe that's what it means. That, oh, they're not going to be able to tell this dwarf apart from another.
Well, yeah.
I think that, you know, that plays into it.
These people are like, oh, I saw a dwarf. That must be the one. I'll just tell her about the dwarf I saw.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they're like Cersei. They're like, I didn't know there were that many dwarves in the world.
Right. It's like, great job, everyone. We're doing really good.
Just a few anecdotes. Cersei says there are gargoyles in Dragonstone that look more like the imp than this creature. That was pretty funny. Here's another anecdote. One said that the imp was hiding in an old town brothel, pleasuring men with his mouth. It made for a droll picture, but Cersei did not believe it for an instant. The second claim, we already read those. Hermit. So that was the first one, the brothel.
Yeah. Which?
How funny would that be if that was Penny and Penny's father?
It could be possible.
Tyrion. I like it.
You know, Tyrion and Penny. I don't know, he's the only dwarf I could find that had a connection to Old Town.
So I like it a lot.
I'm just going to headcanon that.
Yeah, I'm on board. So you got one buy-in. Can we talk about the other conversations that Cersei has while she's seeing folks?
Mm-hmm.
AKA, I just want to mention her convo with Pycelle.
Oh, yeah.
The best.
Because she sees a couple people. Pycelle comes in. This guy, Lord Giles, is sick.
Oh, yeah.
And Cersei's like, you know, listing off all the people who maybe poisoned him or did something or would have some vestment in him being sick.
Anything that she might do to him, basically.
Right. Yeah. And she's like, maybe Pycelle. He's like, maybe you took advantage. Let me find exactly what it is. Because it's so funny because he freaks out for good reason.
Oh, yeah.
He's so mean. I feel so bad for Pycelle. I don't always feel bad for him.
She's
but really bad
to him. She's mean to him twice in this chapter. And
she's just an old guy. He's just an like, old man. You
and
know?
So is Giles Rosby.
Yeah, he's that's true.
He's just an old man who was in his bed dying.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have my leave to die.
Yeah. Pycelle's like, listen, I know that he coughs all the time. And she was like, yeah, he coughed through Robert's Rebellion, Robert's Rule, and blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, Cersei. Sorry, Your Grace. He's coughing up bits of his lungs now. Like, things have escalated. This is for real.
He does not have my leave to die.
Like, okay. Yeah. I want to find, where is this thing where he's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Your Grace, who would want Lord Giles dead? His heir, perhaps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. An old enemy, a new one, you. Says the old man blanched. Your Grace Japes, I have purged his lordship, bled him, treated him, blah, 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 blah. He, like, goes on and on about all the stuff he's done. He's like, oh, I could never think of that. I'm so, like, I would never, ever do that. I just thought it was so funny.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, just the poor guy, like, stop messing with him.
He's just a bit twitchy since Tyrion threw him in the black cells.
I mean, can you blame him?
He's old.
How old is he? 84? 85? 84. At first, I said something like, yeah, it said 480. I was like, is he 480 years old?
Yeah, he is.
Took me a second because
they have that.
Dumb. Well,
maybe the Maesters have like some. No, they don't. They die.
No, yeah.
Here's a passage when he was talking about his age. His tongue flickered across his lips, or flicked, excuse me. I was but 2 and 40 when the conclave called me. Caith was 80 when they chose him, and Elendor was nigh on 90. The cares of office crushed them. And both were dead within a year of being raised. I don't know. That might be suspicious to all you guys. Maybe not. Marion came next, only 6 and 60, but he died of a chill on his way to King's Landing. Afterward, King Aegon asked the Citadel to send a younger man. He was the first king I served. And so he went there at 42 years old. Cersei goes, and Tommen will be the last.
Right. So if he's 84, that means that he went to court right before Summerhall, mm-hmm. like right in the final year of Aegon's.
So he only got 1 year with Aegon.
Yeah, but there he was. So Pycelle, man, he's seen everything.
That was one of my favorite parts of this chapter, was when she turned the questions onto him, and I was like, wait a second, this guy's got so much fun information we can get out of. Let's ask him as many questions as possible. Let's ask him about what it was like to be there.
Right.
Yeah. And then she says stuff like this to him. What did I just say? Have your ears grown as feeble as your cock? Can you make me such a potion, or must I command Lord Qyburn to rectify another of your failures? Not very appreciative of that wise, beardless man.
He's, yeah. I mean, he's been around the block.
Exactly.
So. And then the knives.
So then she dismisses him, and the conversation continues to spiral as she's eating dinner with Tommen, which I loved the moment where he's like, Tommen, let's see if I highlighted it. I'm trying to look. Anyway, it describes Tom and the kittens playing at his feet. Mm-hmm. So that was so sweet. But they're talking about Margaery, and Cersei makes some comment about how she would love to tear Margaery's tongue out. And Tommen's like, don't say that. You know, you leave her tongue alone. Don't touch her. I'm the king, not you.
Yeah.
Which, let's talk about striking a chord with Cersei.
She's like, I'm about to rip your tongue out. I don't care how much I love you. I'm the king.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It got me thinking and I'm curious to hear you guys' thoughts, because I just feel like there's so many differences between book Cersei and show Cersei. And I feel like in the book, I feel like in the show, she very genuinely loves her kids, and like she wouldn't lay a finger on them. And she is much more kind and gentle with them. Mm. And maybe even more protective of them. But I feel like in the book, she doesn't quite have that same, like, she still is much more self-interested. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have picked up on that as well, or if maybe I'm reading too much into it.
No, but I vehemently agree with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think Cersei does not love anyone but Cersei, including her kids. I mean, she thinks she loves her kids, but she sees her children as extensions of herself.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a mirror.
It was just in this chapter where she had a thought that, oh, she was looking at Tommen, I think it was maybe at breakfast before they started talking. And she was like, I'll never do anything but protect him and make sure that nothing bad ever happens to him for the rest of his life. It wasn't breakfast. Mm. But then like the next sentence was, so she sent Tommen off with Jocelyn Swift. And I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, it's like,
where's Tommen?
It's like she feels that way because it benefits her. Not because exactly. She cares about Tommen.
Like the idea of it would be what a good mom is, maybe.
Right. The idea of being a protective mother. But on the other hand, she thinks, you know, she's not going to let anything bad happen to him ever. But the night before, when he had that, you know, little rebellious moment, she sent him off to bed with instructions to have him whip the whipping boy himself. Not just watch it, but to do the whipping himself until Pate was bleeding from both cheeks. And if he refused, Oswell was going to, not Oswell. Here we go.
Let's count it. All right. Oswell, Osfried,
Osbert, whichever one is the Kingsguard. That one was going to call Qyburn and have Pate's tongue ripped out to teach him the, you know, the value of, or of not being rebellious. Now, it's a sharp lesson. It's a total Tywin kind of thing to do, but it doesn't indicate that she's loving her child. And then the very next morning, after being so horrible to him, she's like, oh, I just make sure nothing horrible ever happens to him. Unless I do it.
Unless I do it, yeah.
Because that's good. Okay. Yeah.
My she question got physical with him,
too. Sorry.
Sorry. My question with that is, do you think that... do you think that's a specific punishment for Tommen because she knows that he kind of has a much gentler spirit about him? Or do you think that that's something that she punished Joffrey with as well? And that is kind of what turned him into,
that's like, a good
I don't
know
if that's a punishment for Joffrey, but, you know, I was just kind of thinking about that.
I definitely think she could have used that same sort of tactic kind of across the board. You know, when usually when you have kids, you realize that your kids are different and you have to treat them differently, you know,
right.
A little bit. I mean, you have roles right. and stuff like that, but everybody has a different personality, and to kind of get the best out of them, you tailor your approach, I guess.
Right.
And I could see Cersei just being like, we're going Tywin style, sharp lessons. That's what we do in this family. And, you know, poor little Tommen. Joffrey would have been like, yes, we're going to whip the whipping boy.
The punishment would be, you can't whip this. We're not going to whip someone, okay? He's like, but wait, you said I could whip someone. No. That opens up the possibility that maybe the stories about Joffrey of just sort of always being intrinsically bad, maybe she had a lot more to do with it than we know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's sad, if so.
It makes Tommen even more of a miracle.
Right?
Precious little boy.
Mm-hmm. She just didn't have attention for him, maybe. She was on to other stuff.
Or he just is
he's
a
just
beautiful,
so pure at
soft
heart
child.
Who loves kittens. You just...
Yeah. Just like cats.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, you just related because of kittens, right? I didn't want to call you out, but...
That's fine. I'll call myself out.
All this Oswell, Osmond stuff made me think of that Radio Westeros episode I just did with you guys. And I just realized that we haven't like shouted that out at all on the podcast yet. So, hey, thanks for inviting me on that. And if you're listening to this, you should probably listen to that.
Yeah.
Boom.
Definitely. That was our, I believe it was our 10th quiz episode, all about houses. And we just gave a spoiler.
Sort of. I don't know. You have to, it's not a really direct answer.
See if you can figure it out.
That was a lot of fun.
It was fun. I like doing the quizzes.
Okay, I've got a quiz for you. Gray mist. Do you believe in it?
In which?
Gray mist. The theory.
What is gray mist?
It's we need to get Chloe back. It's the thousand eyes. It's a three-eyed raven appearing in gray mist. Or potentially another foe with that throughout the series, dating all the way back to book one even. Have you heard this theory, Jen?
I have not.
Oh.
Oh, my word.
Now I feel like I have to describe it for everyone, and I'm not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
It's more of a feeling at this point. I failed everyone.
I'm not going to bail you out.
No, it's fine. If you're listening, I think you get the feeling too.
Yeah. Well, just go Google it.
Well, it was inside of this prophecy, and I think that we see it mostly in dreams. And so I think I'm on the right track here. And we know how Bran can travel, and we know how Brendan Rivers can travel, a.k.a. the Three-Eyed Raven, can travel through space and time and apparently everything in between. Some gray mist furls in this vision when Cersei and her friends are visiting Maggy the Frog. I think that's the last thing that we haven't talked about on this chapter so far.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just, you know, the biggest deal of the chapter. When you don't know it's coming, there it is. And you've got pages and pages of exposition detailing a dream that Cersei Lannister is having. As if that wasn't cool enough, we learn about what may have made her such a terrible foe.
What makes her tick.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really interesting to have it all laid out so concretely. I think it's interesting to have her dreaming of it. Because we also get her thoughts as she we see the regret that she has, that she kind of acted the way that she did, I guess. She makes some comment along the way about how she should have listened. She should have listened to everyone. She should have run away, you know, that she was a fool and she was young, and she says that she didn't have enough sense to be afraid of what she was getting herself into. And so to have that layer on top of this thing and this experience that she has as a kid, I think added a really interesting perspective on how this has changed her life trajectory. Mm-hmm. I think that that can lead us into a discussion that about whether or not, you know, is Cersei the way that she is because of this prophecy, or did this prophecy really prophesy the way that she would be? You know, I don't know if that's a question that we can necessarily answer, but we come up with, I think, two of the biggest questions that we have with Cersei's trajectory going forward, which is who the Valonqar is and who is the younger, more beautiful thing that comes into her life. And I think after reading this for the first time, and once you understand this, it just really reframes the way that we interact with her as a character, for better, for worse. And so I think that there's a lot to unpack.
Definitely.
So who do we think Valonqar is?
I don't agree Cersei on any of these issues. Well, the ones that are obvious, you know, but she gets it wrong. She's just a classic, you know, prophecy's going to bite your prick off. Kind of thing, you know, because I think just trying to like mold your life to avoid a prophecy is a big mistake.
Is that why Maggie the Frog was so arrogant in her response? Like, all right, you're going to regret this because you were maybe going to force this to be more true than it ever was. Or maybe the truth didn't begin until you forced the hand in this.
Yeah.
Yes, maybe it would have been different if you wouldn't have come and forced me to do this in the way that you did, something like that.
Yeah, because she kind of came and she was arrogant right from the start and demanded it. And, you know, then you take that personality and obviously that person's going to try to make it come true or make it not come true, you know?
Right.
The whole thing about, will I marry the prince? No, you'll marry the king. And so she goes off thinking, oh, you know, that's cool. I'm going to marry Rhaegar after he becomes the king. So, you know, that probably colored a lot of the way she acted about things. She's thought about the kids and couldn't figure it out, and she moved on. But then obviously at some point convinced herself that she should suspect Tyrion.
She just always hated Tyrion. Yeah.
It adds fuel to the fire.
She always loathed him. I think, you know, the idea that when she found out what a Valonqar was, that her little brother would,
racing home after she murders her friend to look up in a dictionary what Valonqar actually means.
Yeah. I love that about Melara Heatherspoon, where she says, Baggy, she's so awesome. She's like, your death is here tonight. Can you smell her breath? She's very close. That was
so good.
She's right there. It's Cersei. She's going to throw you down a well as soon as you walk out of here.
Tonight is the night.
Oh, dear.
So do you think it was a guess or it was real prophecy?
Or do you think Cersei did it because she wanted to?
She did it. It's funny because it's right away. She goes right into action trying to forestall this prophecy because I think it comes later, but the way this is revealed, it's so, you know, over so little bits and pieces of it. Melara is going to, says if we don't talk about it, it'll never come true.
Right.
So I think, you know, that Cersei's just like, okay, no one is ever going to talk about it because it was just you and me, and I'm going to push you down a well, and then it won't come true, right? Because no one knows about it.
She was smart enough not to trust her, though, you know?
Yeah. I just think, wow,
yikes.
That's what she's capable of at this young age.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then sets everything in motion.
Yeah.
Just shows how it happens, you know.
Is she a palm reader? that was able to assess the situation and know that Cersei was the kind of person that would go back, you know, like based on the threat that she threw down to wake her up, do you think that she was just like, all right, well, if I say something like this, if I, what am I talking about? It was definitely magic, right? Definitely it's blood magic. Right? There's shadow babies in this book. I'm just looking for the...
Well, and she draws blood. I mean, so... It's definitely blood magic.
Is it Pycelle or Qyburn who says to her about blood magic later?
Qyburn, because she's really only the most open with him, right?
Yeah. She asks Pycelle, but then she mocks him and sends him away.
Oh, yeah. His answer wasn't good enough for her. She's like, all right, just go.
Like, don't meddle with the future. And she's like, never mind. I've already meddled with the future.
Give
I need
me
a better
potion.
Answer.
Yeah, too late.
Too late.
I love Qyburn's response. He's such a fun character. She's like asking him about all this stuff. And instead of looking at her like she's a little bit crazy, he's like, a woods witch. Most are harmless creatures. They know a little herbcraft and some midwifery, but elsewise.
Yeah, the way he's so matter of fact about everything.
And he's interested in the dark and the strange. And hearing about a prophecy, it's like almost like he expected it. Like, oh yeah, like this is what you're dealing with, right?
You know what I really liked about that conversation? When Cersei's like, the small folk used to call her Maggie, and he's like, Magi? He's like, oh, that's how you say it.
Yeah.
So that was, I liked that.
That's clever too, because it also takes it in the. It's a almost meta because it connects for us, you know. The
Miri,
yeah, you know. So all of a sudden we're like, oh, she was one of those,
right?
Yeah, you know? I like that
and
a lot.
It's a really neat callback.
I like how simple it can be. Otherwise, it could be Maggie in a different area of the world. You know, when no one has any context, it could just be a person that you go to. And, you know, has all these spices and has a cabin, but still has this power. It really decorates, I think, Planetos. George is pretty good at writing.
Pretty good at world building.
Yeah.
I would say.
The situation with the prophecy, especially with all the Lannister stuff, the Tyrell stuff that we talked about earlier, is so fascinating to me.
Yeah, we're very clearly at the unraveling, I think, of Cersei's storyline. And so, I mean, yeah, we know that we are. And so I'm looking forward to continuing to see that play out, because I think that we're finally going to get some satisfaction after having to watch her run around doing what she's been doing for so long. I think that we're going to get our due, which I'm very much looking forward to.
So nearing conclusion of the chapter, who do you believe Cersei's Valonqar is? And do you believe that the prophecy, based on the... I don't want to lead the question. Never mind. Do you believe it's going to happen? And who is it?
Yes. Hannah, do you want to go or do you want me to go?
I don't mind. I think we both agree that it's going to happen.
We both agree with that. I mean, I think it's Jaime.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, so we agree.
I think that like sometimes people see that as a cliche answer. But I just think that that's the most plausible trajectory. And people can make the argument that he doesn't have hands, but I just I don't buy that. So I definitely think
that
it's
is
him.
Such a spur in that conundrum, right? You're like, well, he lost a hand, so
But he actually thinks about strangling is it Red Ronnet? Or some he thinks about strangling somebody with his golden hand. In feasts at some point.
I hope that it's Red Ronnet.
And I think it probably is.
The Dark Star of the North, as we call him.
But it's definitely the most, you know, the most poetic solution. And the way the information is revealed that, you know, it's very sneaky though. Oh, we mysteriously know that she was born first.
Right.
You know, that information is kind of leaked out in the same sort of patchwork grouping of hints about this whole thing that we get over the course of, you know, this book and the last one, I think. So,
So Tywin gets choked out by a hand of gold, and so does she.
And so does she. Little Tywin.
Always Tywin cold.
Yeah, just like she wants to be so much like her father, and here we go.
Here we go.
The one that was going to take care of all of her foes for her. Destroys her greatest foe, herself.
Yeah. Yeah, which I think, you know, I love her paranoia about Tyrion, which I think is going to make what happens our guess, between her and Jamie even more intense as she comes to that realization that this, her brother, who she was so afraid of her whole life and just upended everything to get rid of, that wasn't what she needed to be worried about in terms of the prophecy. And I think that that's going to add an interesting layer to everything that ends up happening. So I don't care if it's cliche. Like you said, I think it's poetic. So
yes, sometimes poetry's like that.
Yeah. But Zach, what do you think? Oh, sorry.
No, Zach, I want to know what Zach thinks.
I think that it's Jamie too. Although it could just be Tyrion, you know?
But yeah.
I love the symbolism there. Or whichever fancy word works there.
Yeah.
Connecting all of it, you know?
Well, in support of it being Jamie, let's talk about the younger, more beautiful person.
Okay.
I mean, he is gorgeous.
Well, so this is jumping ahead a little bit because we got this own that we're going to read in a little bit. Can I just read it now? Okay. I'm going to read it now because I want your guys' thoughts. Jen Calhoun tweeted at us her own, said, "For Cersei, own to the origins of my favorite theory, that not only is Jaime the Valonqar, but he will do it to save or avenge Brienne, who is another younger and more beautiful, to cast you down and take all you hold dear."
Yes.
Which
love
I
it.
Love it. And so I'm just curious what your guys' thoughts are on this idea.
Well, she's called Brienne the Beauty.
Oh.
For a reason.
I think it's so great.
Not just to make fun of her, but because she is beautiful. She's beautiful inside. And Jamie is learning that about her. And Jamie, we know, is the thing that Cersei, the only thing Cersei loves in the world, although that's arguably because she sees him as an extension of herself. So the only thing she holds dear is Jamie.
That is so complicated, and I love it.
Boom, boom.
So how exactly does she supplant Cersei? Is the idea that she sort of, by virtue of being such a person that she is able to give Jaime the perspective that eventually frees him from this, I guess, state of mind? You know, we see his small changes from White Sword Tower and beyond.
Yeah.
Is that, did it already start and we're just seeing it maybe cascade in another direction, and perhaps in Winds or in Dreamspring, it'll be even more like amplified if they see each other again?
Yeah, I think it's just, it's really just the Jaime redemption arc. And by casting her down and taking all she holds dear, it's Cersei's the one who introduces the whole idea of it being a queen. It doesn't say, Maggie never said that this person was a queen. Just that it was somebody younger and more beautiful who would cast you down and take all you hold dear. And if you think about it, her relationship with Jamie is really the only thing that she's ever valued in her life. So for her to be cast down in Jamie's estimation, and for Jamie to see her finally for what she is, and to value another woman over her, and it doesn't have to even be romantically. It just, he really does admire Brienne. And I think he's going to choose her, that path, over the path of Cersei.
It could also maybe be romantic, though.
It could be. But it doesn't
sounds
have
like
to
canon
be.
To me, guys. This all sounds very much like canon to me.
I agree that it does not have to be romantic.
Give two
but.
Different, you know, possible paths for this.
I like it a lot, though. I think that it's such an interesting theory. And I think it's the best explanation of, because I think it also plays into this idea of, she's so worried about Tyrion. Well, she's also so worried about, I mean, rightly so, someone like Margaery, but she's so worried about Margaery.
Yes.
And Sansa, where it's like, you know, sure, but these aren't the people in the prophecy that you need to be concerned with. I think that that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. This is my favorite theory so far this episode.
Well, you know, this what you say about this, her, because it's really the foundation of her whole plot against Margaery. Her conviction that Margaery is, that the younger, more beautiful person is a queen. Mm-hmm. So then she, you know, therefore assumes that it's Margaery. And then when she talks to Qyburn, you know, he says to her, like, this very cryptic, I think you know what you have to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally me.
So it's the palm reader. You know, he's the new Maggie the Frog.
Right. He's just egging her on to go ahead and do something horrible, which turns out to kind of be her own downfall.
Yeah. Rather than, you know, listen to your heart, let's just make a feud with the other most powerful family in the realm.
It's legit.
Yeah.
Qyburn loves chaos.
Yeah.
And we all know that chaos is a ladder. So
we do know that.
Yeah. I think there was a little contrast there to actually her, where it ends with her. So this, the seeds of her plotting against Marjorie. There's a little piece back in the Danny chapter where she thinks about Dario. I think it was in that chapter. Dario urging her to plot against the masters. Like, get them all in one place and then kill them.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought there's almost like a little synchronicity between those two. Danny says to her, thinks about it and goes, nah. And Cersei's like, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Danny sort of turns into the things that look more difficult. And she realizes that doing the same thing over and over might not be the way out of here.
Mm-hmm. So Cersei is, she just got it all wrong, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Not looking too good.
You could say that.
I'm interested to see what brute force she uses to stick around longer, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it could be actually that whole thing that Danny thinks about, you know, get them all in one place and then do something horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the adaptation is kind of pretty close to where George is actually headed then?
It could be. And especially when you look at that, like, that idea is first floated in this kind of parallel chapter, you know? Oh, get people in a church because she's thinking about her wedding, and then whatever, slaughter them. I mean, it does give you, well, it gave me pause. I thought, well,
same.
Yeah. There's an interesting thought.
So who's getting married next in King's Landing?
Damian and Brienne. Oh, wait, sorry.
Well, we do have a lot of sparrows. Maybe there'll be some kind of religious rite soon.
Or could it could be I don't know if the trial will be at the Sept, but there could be a big, I don't know.
That would be a good time.
It seems like that would be almost too quick, but because I think that's imminent in, you know, at the end of Dance, I think Marjorie's trial is imminent, and I don't think Cersei's had enough time to plot anything.
And we're going
to
see all this happen before all of our friends from the East are coming splashing to the shores of Westeros, we assume, or at least breaking into the knowledge of Landing, because how wild would it be for her to do it, learning about what's coming?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or maybe she would use that as an opportunity to unleash hell, you know?
Mm-hmm. As like a last ditch scattered effort of like, it won't be them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting how it changes, though, if the Tyrells are using this Loras Tyrell story as a ruse and are planning something more. Like, how many, who will they really have, you know, in that situation?
Right.
If Loras, maybe he survives in a strange way or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it'll play out much differently. I think she may do the same thing, but I'm pretty sure it would play out pretty differently.
Yeah.
Lady Glenn, if you want to talk to us for the next 4 or 5 hours tonight, I think we can just theorize about the rest of the series if you want.
We'll figure this.
Yeah. We'll come up with definitive answers. So
do you guys want to go to Owns?
Let's go to Owns.
Owns for the Cersei chapter.
Are we going to start with Cersei?
Just right into it. I don't know. We don't have to. Sometimes we do that, right?
Yeah, no, I'm totally in.
Mm-hmm.
My own is from the beginning of the chapter when we learn that Tommen gives Loras a hug as he rides off before battle.
Oh, so nice.
Because it's just like so sweet. I just love Tommen.
Tommen really likes Loras too.
Tommen loves Loras. Like, Thomas just really looks up to him, and it's sweet to think of him giving a hug to this guy who he cares so much about, who's off knowing what his mom is trying to accomplish. So, own to that.
That's sweet.
Tommen's hugs.
My own is to Jane Farman. You're like, who?
Yeah.
Intrigued.
The third person in the trio that went to Maggie the Frog's tent, she was the one that got the F out of there.
What a yeah. good own.
That's really good. And
Cersei even thinks she was the wise one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has like a dozen children and married right. someone very nice, and they have yes. a great home right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Although they're on Fair Isle, so to be fair, I think that Ironborn could be a danger, but
ouch.
Yeah, there's better places to be, but until yeah. then.
But until then, she's been pretty lucky. So Jane Farman.
I like it.
I'm gonna give my own to Sir Osmond for his really mean joke about his colleague Boros Blunt when Cersei asks, at least it's the very end of the chapter, and she's making a two level plan to turn people against who. Each other, of course. Mm-hmm. And she's like, can your brothers defeat Boros Blunt in a fight? Specifically Oswell, I think. It might have been Osney. You know, it's hard
Osney.
To
keep yeah, separate. I think it's Osney.
And he's like, Boros the belly? Sir Osmond chortled. Which, a chortle, when you really think about it. You know, he didn't, it wasn't a small laugh. He was truly like, he thought this was actually funny. He's what? 40, 50, half drunk half the time, fat even when he's sober.
So good.
Such a good line.
Such a good insult.
Oh, yeah.
Boros the belly.
All right, on to Daenerys.
Wait, also honorable mention to Bronn for moving on up in Castle Stokeworth.
Yeah, shout out to him.
Oh, yeah.
He's a deranged man, but he's, you know, he's Bronn.
So. Yeah, they're doing his thing.
Yeah.
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 Any more? That you got?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, I just want to give you time.
No.
I'm going to give my Daenerys own to something we briefly mentioned, but he calls Sir Barristan Sir Grandfather, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah.
So own that to that. Good.
I think it's very cute. I give my own to Eerie because she had the best comeback to Jiqui when they were... They were fighting over Ricaro and how hot he is. Jiqui called Eri, you know, a boy. She's like, oh, you're just a boy, because she's little and skinny. And Eri's comeback says, it is known you are a cow. Ricaro does not bed with cows. That was like the greatest burn.
Ricaro must be a hot commodity right now.
Seriously.
He's turning blood against yeah. blood.
I can't even imagine. He just went away and he like grew a foot and grew a beard and got some bells in his hair. And the girls were all like, woo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So good.
Kind of want to give my own to the Carthian Camelry, but I feel like we already talked about it enough ridiculously. And then so I think I'm going to give my own to that moment that I think you tried to talk about earlier, Lady Gwen, where Shae Pate was like, this is old news and stale. And Dario shoots back. He goes, your mother said the same of your father's kisses. That's dark, man. I mean, dark. Obviously that happened because you're humans, but you didn't have to pull it out in the shave pate. He's got a hard enough life as it is.
Burn.
Well, those are our owns. And now it's time to read everybody else's.
Jerry from Mayo at Unloused on Twitter writes, Danny owned to Belwas. Everyone else just cursed Brown Ben Plum or vaguely pledged to kill him. Belwas had a recipe in his back pocket. Strong Belwas thumped his scarred belly with his fists and swore to eat Brown Ben's heart with plums and onions.
Jerry, I love it.
With sides, too.
Cersei owned a Maggie. Ever since that fateful night all those years ago, she has figured in everything Cersei has done. Deep down in her heart, I think Cersei realizes she cannot escape her fate, no matter how hard she tries to avoid it. Hashtag, don't mess with the prophetess. Mm. Also, I want to add to your own, Jerry, don't ever wake a sleeping sorceress.
Mm.
That's also very good.
Valid. I love Belwas's recipes.
It sounds like a tasty mixture, actually. Plums and onions.
Plums. It's Brown Ben Plum. I didn't get it the first time, and then I
read
it
now.
And I was like,
oh, shit.
Plums. Belwas, you're a brilliant.
A genius.
That's funny. Yes.
I'll get the next one. We have Jose Pereira on Twitter. He says, to Missandei, for hearing the Astapori scratching at the walls the night before when they're a mile away. There are many theories about this. Dragons below the pyramids nesting. She's a faceless man. Skaha's tunnels. My favorite, that she's an unbeknown telepath. It seems far-fetched, but remember, Chekhov's gun principle. Nothing is introduced in a book or in a movie if it's not going to be used later.
Truth.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. We kind of touched on that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Jen Calhoun at Calhouner. own to Eiri and Jigui for putting up with the worst kind of girl at a sleepover, Daenerys, who basically calls dibs on Ricaro when poor Eiri and Jigui were just trying to talk about how he suddenly came back hot after summer vacation. Hashtag how rude. Yeah, that's true too. And for Cersei, own to the origins of my favorite theory that not only is Jaime the Valonqar, but that he will do it to save or avenge Brienne, who is another younger and more beautiful, to cast you down and take all you hold dear. Hashtag Brienne the Beauty. Jen, I love you.
Yeah, I'm so glad that Jen sent that in.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
So we could talk about it.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Speaking of Brienne the Beauty, Brienne of Tarth, at Beauty Brienne on Twitter. Crowd favorite writes, for Cersei, more of a question than an own. If she hadn't gone to Maggie the Friggy, would the Valonqar prophecy still happen? Would Cersei still be Cersei? Good question. And for Dany, Eiri and Jigui, and they're arguing over Ricaro, get my own. Death, war, famine, conspiracies, .. thirst. That's a chapter really covered a lot of things.
That's so funny.
That part obviously stood out.
So funny.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of like the hinge of the chapter. So,
yeah. Thirst. Oh, so yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, we have Amy Calhoun, who says, own in Dany's chapter to Daario for somehow making Dany forget she spent the day in Diarrhea War Camp and getting a chance to ride the dragon.
Whoa.
And in Cersei's chapter to Bronn for offering his competition until he gets his castle. Book Bronn is a bad dude.
Shout out Calhouns. Coming to full force. Diarrhea War Camp. Can we start a new band, guys? And we'll just do that.
I do not want that to be my band name.
West Rock band name.
It's a one man band. That's yeah, you're right. All you.
You're right. Westerosi speed metal.
Could you imagine? Yeah, camp. It's got to be speed metal, right? It really has to be. Oh man, that was a lot of fun.
That was awesome. Good owns.
Thanks to everyone who sent in your own to us, and yeah, thank you.
If you want to send in an own for our next episode, you can find us on Twitter at Game of Owns. That's probably the best way to send those in, or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
Next on the podcast, two chapters without a name, but so much in the name, The Prince of Winterfell and The Watcher.
So amped.
Do I say that
every time? I really mean it this time. You can find our reading order if you want to follow along. If you want to catch up, you can find that at afeastwithdragons.com.
Lady Gwyn, are you thinking of the front door of the Mines of Moria when you hear The Watcher? Or is it just me?
The Watcher, yes.
Can I throw out a Lord of the Rings reference and will it work? Let's try.
There's so many. I'm actually just, like George himself, I reread Lord of the Rings. Not yearly, but frequently. And I just reread, well, I'm in the process, but I just finished this Two Towers, and there are so many. It's really interesting to reread it when you're deep into A Song of Ice and Fire, because you're like, oh my god.
I should do a Parallels episode.
There's so many. It's crazy.
Let's do it.
Thoughts.
Thank you so much for joining us today, especially right after we had the crossover episode a few days ago. It was like, we have to do this.
No, this was great. Thank you for asking me. This was fun.
Yeah, of course.
Loved doing it.
And thank you for rereading the chapters before you joined us, unlike our friend Aziz, who just skims the chapters before he joined.
Calling you out.
Just because you have the books memorized.
Right, that's the thing. It's hardly a call out. It's something that we talk about where it's like, do we know someone that just has them memorized? Yeah.
Do you want to plug where people can find you?
Sure. You can find us at RadioWesteros.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Radio Westeros. And, you know, we're everywhere also on YouTube and Facebook or Tumblr, wherever you do your social media-ing. But yeah, we have Song of Ice and Fire character analysis, mostly podcasts. And we have just finished about to release our 39th podcast in 4 years. So we are way behind you guys, and we have 10 quiz episodes. Well,
I wanted to ask maybe if you could share with everyone listening the process of putting together your episodes. I find it so fascinating, and I'm not sure how much you want to divulge to everyone, but you're putting out an episode every 6 weeks, And they're roughly, would you say, like 2.5 hours on average a piece outside of the quiz episodes? Yeah. The amount of work that goes into Radio Westeros is so inspirational. It's got to be so different than coming on this thing. And we're like, so what do you think about the bloody flux, huh?
but we love doing stuff like this because this is just like it's like a night at Radio Westeros.
Yeah.
Central, where we're like,
right.
This is just right. Hanging.
Hanging, talking about the bloody flux. But we, you know, we have a fully scripted podcast, or basically full, you know, we write 20,000 words for each episode. Roughly.
You guys are writing essays of work for each episode. Yeah. It's
when
so
you put
cool.
it all together, you know, we figured out, I mean, some of our earlier episodes were not as, were not quite as long, but, and some of them may have been a bit longer. So, you know, we've done 39 episodes and we figure we've written about 700,000 words, which is
amazing.
A pretty big book if we were to put it all together. But anyways, it all comes out to a couple of hours of audio every 6 weeks, and we just love doing it.
You guys are doing amazing work.
I love the individual attention that you're giving on episodes that are so thematic. Mm-hmm. It's those deep dives. It's kind of like a lesson, you know, a lesson. But instead of it being related to something, I don't know, useful in the world, it's this made up story that we all yeah. love so much that we're pulling all these real world cues out of. It's so fun that you guys put so much work into it. I hope that you and Yolkboy are infinitely proud of, you know, the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I know based on our conversations, we have so much excitement building for the release of the next two books.
Oh, yes. We're ready. We are ready for releasing the next book. Yes. And then whatever comes after that, the period of time in between books 6 and 7. We're ready.
So if you could pick, just a random question at the end of the podcast, if you could choose the spinoffs yourself that HBO is doing on top of Game of Thrones, what would be your ideal era and story? Mm. And you can't say Ser Lonnie of Ib. That's cheating.
Although I would just love to know his story.
Really. Me too, honestly.
How did he become a knight?
How did Whalebones become so curved?
Right. How did he learn such fine jousting skills? But no, I think I would really like the Conquest. I think would be great. More on that. I really like Ashea's idea about, you know, Nymeria, or something, you know, or something along that line, those lines, you know, something from Essos. There's so much material there that could be taken and turned into something. There'd be a lot of freedom to add detail within the structure of a lot of the background that's in the world book. So, but if we're sticking with Westeros, I think I would really like to see the Conquest. Lots of dragons. HBO would love it.
So would the folks that they're paying to do their CGI. She's like, are we still going to ask questions at the very end of the podcast?
Are still doing the podcast when I have to pee this bad?
Well, thank you so much, Lady Gwyn, for coming on. Really, it's been a blast.
It's been the best.
And we hope the Yolk Boy comes soon. I know he's nearby.
He's nearby. He wants to come. So you just go ahead and ask him. I've loved being here. So thanks for having me. And congratulations on your 400th episode.
Yay!
Thanks.
That's pretty cool.